Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. You know, we're going to be just taking today's episode from a very hardcore conservative. No, I'm kidding, ladies and gentlemen. I'm kidding. There's enough of that out there anyway. Now, I'm very excited about today's episode because we have a filmmaker on that is just cool turned up to 10. And he made a documentary about a very cool place. And I'm going to just talk to him about it. And you guys, this documentary, it's called Sex, Drugs, and Bicycle. It drops in a week or so, about 10 days. And let's welcome Mr. Jonathan Blank to the show. Jonathan, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I am fantastic. We were kind of talking a little bit before, off mic before the show, and I was telling you, I loved your documentary. I watched it, me and my wife did, and I we want to move to the Netherlands now, you know.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
The tourism should be paying me.
They really should. They really should. In the world we find ourselves living, I don't know how this happened. Maybe it's always been this way, and I was just blissfully unaware. But, man, talk about a contrast. Talk about a contrast. And they seem to be doing pretty good with it, you know? Doesn't seem all that bad to
well.
Me.
I mean, obviously, the pandemic has hit them hard, like a lot of places. But before the pandemic, and I'm sure they'll get back on track after the pandemic, they're one of the best functioning places on earth.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. Now, let me ask you, Jonathan, now were you always filmmaker? Did you know that showbiz was in your blood? This is what you were going to be doing, like when you were growing up and stuff?
I have always been interested in it ever since I was a little kid. I did theater in school and photography, and I was really into media and making audio and video presentations. And my parents both got me into it also in various ways. By giving me equipment that they had when they were kids or stuff like that. And so, yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do. I really enjoy it. And, it's a lot of fun creating these kind of visual stories.
Well, it's so interesting. I have really latched on to, since the pandemic, well, I've always had an interest. I got bored with traditional movies and stuff. You know, I mean, you can only watch superheroes so many times, and you're like, yeah, okay, I get it. The hero's journey. You know, I've seen this 87,000 times. I'd rather, if I'm going to sit here and watch something, come away from it maybe a little smarter about something I didn't know about. You know, and so I am hooked on all these various YouTube channels now, and documentaries in general. And I got the electronic press kit for your documentary, Sex, Drugs, and Bicycle. And, you know, I watched the trailer and I was like, holy smoly, I got to watch this. I wanted to watch it right then. But I waited for my wife to get home and stuff. And she's got me trained well. But we did. We just thoroughly enjoyed it. This is amazing. Now, you had mentioned in the trailer you had been to Holland before, and then you kind of wanted to reevaluate it, right? Have a second shot at it.
Yeah, well, I made a doc about Holland over 20 years ago, and it at that time it was even more liberal than it is now. It was by far the most liberal country in the world, and they were way out front on a lot of issues, from marijuana and drug policy to issues like poverty and health care, gay rights, minority rights, and so on. And there was a huge contrast. And I made that movie, and it did really well. It played, it went theatrical. It played in over 100 cities around North America. It grossed over $1 million in the art houses. And I got reviewed in every major newspaper in the country, and everybody was saying, you know, wow, this place is really outrageous. What can we learn from it? And apparently we didn't learn anything from it.
No.
Although, you know, it was interesting, you know, like Trump got elected and I thought, wow, you know, this is so weird because, you know, all like one of the big things you hear from his side of the aisle is if we do things like universal health care, America is going to turn into Venezuela, you know, and I kept thinking, how can they say this to people? It's so ridiculous because
right.
every other developed country in the world has universal health care.
And they're not
us,
Venezuela.
And they're definitely not Venezuela. And I said, you know, like, let me go back to Holland now and see how they're changing and evolving and how they're doing now compared to how they were 20 years ago. And what I found is that they're not as liberal because it seems like the whole world got more conservative after 9/11 and the whole war on terror and the militarization of the world affected them just like it affected everybody. But they're still arguably the most liberal country in the world, up definitely in the top five with the Nordic Scandinavian countries. But it was interesting to see the places where they hadn't progressed and where they had progressed. And it was also interesting to compare to America because in some ways we've definitely progressed since that time. You know, now we have gay rights are way far ahead from where they were back in the 90s. And and now marijuana is becoming legal everywhere, including a bunch of red states are voting to make it legal, and it looks like it's going to become legal. So that has really changed here. So in some ways we've progressed, but in other ways we've fallen further behind. And the movie has a big section on healthcare, and that is one of the key things where I really think we could learn from Holland and the other European countries, because we're spending twice what they are on healthcare, almost twice.
Absolutely.
And we have a huge number of people who have no insurance. It's, I think, 30 or 40 million people with no insurance, over 10, 11% of the population. And then, but there's about 100 million people who are underinsured, which means that they have some kind of insurance, but it doesn't really cover them for most things. And, you know, I have like decent health insurance, but, you know, I've got, I think it's a $7,500 deductible.
Right.
And so, you know, like that's, so that means basically it's catastrophic insurance. You know, if something really bad happens, then it'll kick in. You know, because if you go to the hospital, it's always going to go over $7,500. But if you're just like going to want to see a doctor or all that, you're never going to get out of the deductible. And it's just crazy. And it was interesting to see because the Dutch completely redid their health care in, I think it was 2006. And they made they had a close to universal system, but they made it better. And they revamped it completely and got closer to 100% coverage. It's like 99.9% coverage. And it's a system that's somewhat like Obamacare, interestingly, which is different from a lot of other countries in Europe. But one of the things that, and I think that this really captured the essence of how they do things there, because I interviewed the chief economist for the healthcare system, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, okay, you're doing private insurance. How do you keep it so that you don't have these insurance executives making millions and millions of dollars like they do in the U.S.?
extortion.
Exactly. How do you prevent extortion? And he said, if you accept any government money, if your company accepts any government money, no one at the company can be paid more than the prime minister.
Fantastic. I love it.
And I thought,
I love it.
There you go. You know, that, you know, and that makes so much sense. You know, why should someone who's getting government money be paid more than the president, for instance? You know, that just seems ridiculous. And so
absolutely.
They have these checks and balances built in that prevent abuse of the system in a way. And I think, you know, but everybody who interviews me always asks, what's the number one thing we could take from the Netherlands and apply here? And I always say healthcare, because people are really suffering here. You know, it's the healthcare expenses are the leading cause of bankruptcy in America. It's bad for business. It's bad for people. It's bad for our economy. It takes up close to 20% of our gross domestic product. And so reforming that and getting to a system like Holland or like any of the other European countries where they have better outcomes than we do would be a really big innovation, and it would save us money and it would really improve people's lives here.
Absolutely. And, you know, I tell friends of mine, and I have all kinds of friends. I mean, I will be the first to admit, I'm in the art world, so, you know, go figure. But it's weird because I have some really conservative friends in that world too. But, you know, everybody's always like, oh, healthcare is so, you know, the universal healthcare would just bankrupt this. I'm like, they don't seem to understand what happens to the common worker bee out here, the common person. They get something happens and they can't afford, like you were saying, they have this, if they do have insurance, they can't afford to go use it because the deductibles are so high. And they let that problem fester and get worse and worse and worse. And then it's a life and death situation. They go into the hospital and the hospital has to spend all of this money, which that person doesn't have. And so it goes, you know, like you said, it goes, kicks back to collections and all this and that. And everybody winds up paying for it. And that's why the rates go up. It's just, you know, and the thing is, you know, you can work a job and have great health insurance and all this and run every morning and eat healthy and just be wonderful. Guess what? You're still paying for the people that don't, you know, and giant bills, you know, people don't really, you know, something that would cost $300 normally can turn into, you know, $300,000 once it gets to, you know, a terrible spot. And it's a dumb system. It's just so stupid. It really is.
And when the people say it would bankrupt us, they're wrong. Their math is all wrong. In Holland, they're spending about 10% of GDP on healthcare, and that's about the average for Europe. Is so, you know, some are less and some are a little bit more, but around 9-10% of GDP. We're spending over 18% of GDP on healthcare.
Absolutely.
And
I
so
like part,
it saves money.
Oh, it completely. It's a smart system. And, you know, there's nothing wrong. I've been in business for myself for a long time, decades and stuff, really the majority of my adult life. And, you know, one of the things I learned early on is there is nothing wrong with seeing a good idea and applying it, you know, that somebody else is doing. Believe me, I sell paintings for a living. that we supersize orders sometimes. You know, I got that idea from McDonald's. Do you want a frame with that? You know, there's nothing wrong with taking a good idea and applying it. And we could, in so many levels, and your documentary really illustrates this. I don't want to give too much of it away. I want people to watch it because it's so fantastic. But one of the things that you touched on, so many things you touched on in this, is the LGBTQI plus scenarios and whatnot, and situations, you know, where like transgendered people or transsexual people, you know, it's that's included in that healthcare. Unlike
it is,
so much
yeah.
here in the States, you know, and, you know, these are people that have an issue just like anybody else, and that maybe the issue is not like anybody else's, but they have an issue nonetheless. And if it isn't addressed or whatnot, you know, what happens here? People, you know, they self-medicate because they're depressed and not happy, and, you know, they have all kinds, that leads to problems and crime, and why not just cut that at the source and help these people, and suddenly they're a productive member of society and everybody's moved on with their day. You know, it just makes so much more sense.
Yeah, it's the old, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yes. And especially in that, you know, that scene and what I remember many, many years ago, Jonathan, I was on a, you know, back in my younger days when I was more of a starving artist, I was going to visit a friend of mine. And I was riding a Greyhound bus, and a transgendered person, young guy, got a girl, got on the bus. And I was sitting next to this older black guy, and he was going to see his kids or something. He had everybody on the bus always had a story. And, you know, which he had told me while we were smoking cigarettes and at one of the stops. But he, you know, he started kind of making a couple comments about this person who got on the bus. And I'm like, dude, give that person a break. You know, I mean, they've got a tough enough day as it is. They're having to ride the Greyhound bus and listen to people like you. You know, come on. You know, and the guy thought it for a second. And he changed his mind. And I just think so many people in this country, if they just think a little bit on so many things, healthcare, gay rights, you know, all this kind of stuff, these social issues and economic issues, they would just come to the logical conclusion, you know, what's right. I don't know. I think they will.
I agree with it.
If more documentaries like yours are out there.
Well, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and there are a lot of great movies and docs that are showing alternative ways of doing things. The thing is, in America, people have been so propagandized by corporate propaganda. You know, it's the insurance executives, health insurance executives who are making, I forget what it is, but I think their average salary is $20 million. It blew my mind when I saw that. They're among the highest paid, if not the highest paid CEOs in the country on average. But they're spending money on ads to tell you why, where they weren't getting paid these crazy amounts, it would be terrible for you, when they're just lying, you know. And we have all this advertising from these companies that are telling you why you should keep things the way they are, because it's in their interest and not ours. And so people end up making these arguments that have no basis in reality about how terrible things would be if we changed, you know. And I mean, look, you know, Ronald Reagan in the 50s in the 60s said that Medicare would turn America into a totalitarian state. And, you know, did that happen? No, you know, and Medicare is now hugely popular because
Absolutely.
It's a great system. You know, old people really rely on it. It's very cost effective. It costs a fraction of what private health insurance costs. And, you know, so it's just, one of the reasons I put up, there are a lot of statistics in the movie, is because, you know, I wanted people to see, here's the data, you know, look at the data of how things really are. And America is just not doing well in any area. You know, we're not number one in anything anymore.
No, death maybe. You know.
Yeah, right.
We're number one
in crystal meth deaths, but you know, like so.
Yeah.
But yeah, we used to be number one in a lot of things, and we're not anymore. And we're not because of basically this endless class warfare from the top down that has redistributed the wealth so heavily from poor people to rich people and you know, just keeps taking away things that used to be, you know, more money for schools, more money for parks, more money for healthcare, more money for social services, more money for roads and bridges and infrastructure. And now there's less money for all those things, and all those things help everybody have a better life. You know, and I
absolutely
would love to see America number one in everything, because I'm a patriotic American, you know, and I think that the people who are arguing against change are really, you know, I don't think that they're doing this on purpose, but essentially what they're arguing for is keeping America down.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Listen to this cool episode ad-free. If you're a VIP member, you can become one on my website, www.jamierocks.us. www.jamierocks.us.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books, like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and the thing is they don't, you know, this country used to be, it used to be all of our money, all the economics was based on manufacturing. That's what it was, you know, and people are like, well, you know, those jobs. Well, really what happened is the country switched to a financial basis. And you're absolutely right. The people making money are these executives at insurance companies and what have you. It's people who move money around. They're not making anything but a bunch of paperwork. And now, with, you know, not even that really, just computers. But the thing is people don't realize that, you know, and they listen to this stuff. I'm telling you, and I don't want to get on the soapbox, and Jonathan, you and I seem to be cut of the same cloth, you know, a little bit, but I'm telling you, when I grew up in Metro Detroit, and when I saw number 45, old Trump, get elected, and I was watching those numbers from Detroit, you know, manufacturing, the hometown of manufacturing, and these people were, I'm like, these people are electing a guy in a suit? They think he's on their side? Everybody in a factory knows the guy in the suit isn't on your side. Come on. What's wrong with you? And sure enough, you know, he wasn't. I don't know. But, you know, it's cool because what your documentary really illustrates that I like is it can be done. This isn't just some fairy tale, some opinion. This is statistically factual. It can happen, you know? It can work.
People can be happy. It can work. It does work. And it works in a lot of places around the world. And we could have it work here, too. There's no reason why we shouldn't be number one at everything, again, the way we were. You know, it's just and the way to do it is by looking at what's working in other places and then applying those things here. And I totally believe we could do that.
Oh, it's so cool. It's so interesting. Now, did you have when you went to make this documentary, when you went back to Holland, you probably had from the first one all these connections and people you knew and stuff that lived there. Were everybody glad to see you again? Because I'm sure they're hoping maybe things will change over here. Because that would benefit them as well. You know, it benefit everybody.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because people in Europe, you know, people are all everywhere around the world, people look up to America, okay? And in Europe, there's that strong feeling like we saved them in World War II from the Nazis, and there's a lot of leftover residual goodwill from that for good reason,
mm-hmm.
because we did save them from the Nazis. And, you know, with the Russians and everybody else contributing, too. They, you know, and they go through phases, and there's definitely times like with the whole war in Iraq where there was a lot of tension, and you could feel it in Europe because they were not down for that war.
Right.
But when with Trump, the whole thing changed, and I suddenly traveling around the world, I started feeling this anti-Americanism that I had never experienced before.
Mm.
And it was because the guy in charge was saying all these things just to piss people off, for, you know, that served no
right.
other purpose.
And it was working.
And it worked. You know, it totally worked. He was very successful at pissing people off. But they still, in their mind, think of America as this much more successful place than it really is. And so when I would start giving them the data on things – like 20 veterans commit suicide every day. You know, most people don't know that, you know, and this is a country
right.
where we say how much we love our troops, right? And we're always talking about the troops, and veterans committing suicide every year. And and if we loved our troops, why would we be allowing that? There's huge numbers of homeless veterans, right? There are 60,
right.
I think it was the last year, Not 2019, 60,000 people died from methamphetamine. no, from drug overdoses related to OxyContin and other opiates, right? So 60,000 people, right? There are, the U.S. has more people in jail than any other country in the world by far. Nobody even comes close. There's like around 2 million people behind bars in this country. And a lot of them are behind bars for minor offenses, drug possession offenses, and many are in jail for failing, for not being able to make bail because they're poor. And
right.
So you say, oh, this is the land of the free, you know, and I, you know, I would tell people these things and they go, what, are you serious? One area where I had a whole section in the movie about this, where the Dutch are definitely struggling, is in race relations. And, you know, they have their big issues. They have this crazy Christmas tradition called Black Pete, where people put on blackface and pretend to be this, like, St. Nicholas's helper named Black Pete. And there's a lot of protests about it. And it's definitely racist, and a lot of people are opposed to it. And I think it's going to change. But it's taking a long time. But so that was one area, and I was hanging out with a bunch of black people, who, some of whom were Dutch. They had colonies like in Suriname, South America, and when they liberated the colony, Surinamese people could choose to become Dutch, and many people there chose to become Dutch. And so there's this black population from Suriname. There's a wide variety of races in the Netherlands. And I was talking to this group of black people, and there was one woman there who was half American, half Dutch. And she was saying how she felt more comfortable in America, and that she thought, you know, that America was better for black people. And I said, you know, it was an interesting conversation. And I said to her, you know, I totally get where you're coming from, because in America, American culture is largely black culture. If you think about our music, our sports, our food, a lot of, you know, actors, film, you know, you just see black people really are a powerful presence in American society. And in Holland, they're not, right? Because it's such it wasn't a melting pot society, and it was all white until the end of the 20th century, largely. Mm-hmm. You know? So I said, you know, I totally get why you feel more comfortable in the U.S., but I said to her, how many Dutch black men and women have lost their right to vote? And she looked at me like I was crazy. She said, what do you mean? I said, in America, 1 in 8 black men and 1 in 13 black women have had their right to vote taken away.
Right.
And she said, are you serious? And I said, yeah, it's called felony disenfranchisement. They charge people with a crime. They take away their right to vote. And so it's millions of American black people have had their right to vote taken away. And I said, how many Dutch people? She goes, nobody. Everybody here can vote. Even people in jail can vote in Holland. And they have among the smallest percentage of people behind bars of any country in the world. So there aren't many people in jail. But even if you're in jail, you can still vote, which makes sense. Because if you were put into jail for a bad law, you should have the right to vote against that bad law. But certainly once you've paid your so-called debt to society, you should be allowed. And I went down a list of things like that, and I said, you know, this is – in America, there's really this situation where African-Americans have been discriminated against at a level that is difficult to comprehend. And there's this guy I follow on Twitter who's really great named Dan Price, and I recommend if you don't follow him, check him out. He's this young CEO of a payment processing company, and I think he's a millionaire. But he made headlines when he decided to pay his employees a minimum starting wage of $70,000 a year. Because he said, well, up in Seattle, where he's from, no one can really live decently without making $70,000 a year. So he did that, and all these other CEOs attacked him and said, you know, what you're doing is crazy. You know, you're never going to be able to handle it. And he's been going for years now doing this. But he has a lot of interesting posts about inequality and other issues. And one, a couple of weeks ago, he did one about racism in the U.S. And it was like 40 different points of how African Americans experience racism. And it was every aspect of society, from educational funding to imprisonment to hiring to healthcare to real estate, every aspect of society. It's just like mind-blowing. I actually took his list and I made it into a blog post crediting him for assembling the information, and I posted it on our blog. And but that's the kind of thing that you just don't have that in the Netherlands. So people get these emotional responses, but the reality is on the ground, you know, life in America is really challenging for a lot of people. This America's become a country where you really need to be rich in order to have a good life, you know, and it didn't used to be that way. And I don't think that that's a recipe for a successful society. I think, you know, everybody who works and participates should be able to have a decent life, you know, and send their kids to a good school and go on a vacation once a year. And, I started the movie because, you know, I interviewed this senator and he started telling me about how in Holland, everybody gets a minimum of 4 weeks paid vacation a year. But not only are the 4 weeks paid, but they're actually double paid. So, because the thinking was, if you want to go on vacation, you need some money to go on vacation. If the company just pays you your normal wages, that's what you need to live. That's what you need to pay your rent and pay for food, and so that you don't have. You might not have anything left over to go on vacation, so you get double paid for that 12th month. And you can use that money to go on vacation. Yeah, and there are a lot of things like that in that society where they just and you know, it makes people more sane and more happy. The number of people I know who get 1 or 2 weeks of vacation a year, and sometimes they don't even take it because they're worried about how it will look, or they feel like they're too busy. They can't afford to take it, whatever, and that's not healthy. You know, everybody needs time off.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so true. And I don't know what it is, what the hang-up is in this country, because, I mean, the majority of people I know, just blithering idiots stumbling around, you know. I mean, sure, I've known some people that have done idiotic things, but for the most part, they're not just functioning morons walking around, you know. But there's this disconnect of people, you know. People making a minimum wage or a decent level—that's just terrible, you know. And I'm like, people doing well and being healthy, and you know, you don't know, man. Maybe that guy who's healthy, or that gal who's healthy, and not worrying about a bunch of stuff. Maybe that person cures cancer. It's investing, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, it's viewing people as part of an economic system, and you're investing in people and not just things. I mean, if you think about every kid who doesn't get a good education, it's like you said, that kid could have invented a cure for cancer, or a new form of energy that's clean, or, you know, solves
maybe he's the next Beethoven. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just, and I'll tell you, you know, it just, it boggles my mind, because I'm just like, I mean, you know, I'm not Forrest Gump, but I'm not Albert Einstein either, but I get it, you know, if plan for the future. It's the grasshopper and the ants, you know, the ants worked hard, they thought ahead, they said, hey, winter's coming, let's plan ahead a little bit. If we would do that as a country, you know, we wouldn't. I think a lot of this nonsense that you see, you know, cops shooting people and because they're scared or they don't know what's happened, you know what I mean? That all of this, these social issues, you know, and I think a lot of that would just clear up, you know, and we could focus on interesting things. You know, we wouldn't have to waste time on a bunch of nonsense. That's just
I
my
agree.
Thought, you know, I mean. Maybe I'm wrong, you know, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
Holland's doing it, so it's working all right for them. Yeah, they got to work
Holland's
on the black
doing
piece,
it. A lot of places are doing it. You know, all of the Scandinavian countries are doing it. They're doing a great job in Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Iceland, Finland. Germany is doing a really good job. So, you know, and the thing is that in the U.S., people, all of our media is, owned by almost all of our media is owned by six companies, and
right.
those six companies are huge. They're owned by billionaires, and those billionaires, their interests are in keeping people divided and keeping people ignorant so that they can continue to take as much for themselves as they can, and people then don't understand how the world could be. And so I hear all the time from people statements like, America has the best healthcare in the world. And I say to them, based on what?
Yeah.
And then they'll never have an answer.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Listen to this cool episode ad-free. If you're a VIP member, you can become one on my website, www.jamierocks.us, www.jamierocks.us.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you two episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are two separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming Smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another. A friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form Smiles.
Ruxgear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierox.us.
No.
Because they're just repeating something. And we do not have the best healthcare in the world. You know, the Gates Foundation ranks us 30th, which is, you know, like near almost the bottom of developed countries. You know, and the thing is, we have like the highest infant mortality rate in the developed world, the highest maternal death rate in the developed world. We're the only developed country with decreasing life expectancy in the world. You know, so it's there are a lot of things, and every, you know, like an MRI here is $1,000. In Europe, it's $250. You know, like all of these things where we do not have the best healthcare, and people are repeating something that they've been, in essence, brainwashed into thinking by corporate media. So the whole argument, one of the reasons that Trump's fake news accusations, you know, hit a nerve in a way, I think, is because there is some truth to it. But the fake news media isn't fake because of liberal journalists. The fake news media is fake because of right-wing billionaires who own the media. So our media isn't liberal. Our media is extremely conservative. And it's amazing that we lie, you know, like they get away with saying this, like it's really one of those big lies that the media is liberal. Reporters tend to be liberal because, you know, reality has a well-known liberal bias. And
right.
But the fact is that they're not allowed to just publish anything they want because the publishers are these billionaires who tell them what to write and what to say, and the media in general in the U.S. is extremely right-wing, all of it. You know, the New York Times is very right-wing. You know, it's just not like bonkers, insane, filled with lies the way like Fox News is, you know. So I think it's important to try to seek out other forms of information and to do a lot of research and to become well-informed, because otherwise you're just going to believe these billionaires who want to keep you poor and take it for themselves.
Absolutely. I tell my young friends that, you know, and I'm like, it doesn't matter what you watch. You watch CNN, you watch MSNBC, Fox, whatever. It doesn't matter. If you want to know who's calling the shots, watch the commercials, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the people writing the checks. You know, that's really what that's about. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know about you, Jonathan. I read about six or seven web-based newspapers, you know, usually in the morning when I'm having my breakfast, my coffee, you know, when I take my little breakfast break. And I figure between that much information, I might get somewhere in the middle of the truth, you know. But you got to dig through it, you know. And I never believe as gospel anything I just read, you know. I'm amazed that grown adults do that whole QAnon thing. I was like, really?
Yeah, that is unreal. Really? To have witnessed that is just crazy that anybody has fallen for that QAnon nonsense.
I have friends of mine that are really into UFOs that are less crazy than some of those people. You know, I mean, whoa.
I got really into UFOs at one time, and then I did all this research on it, which is what I do when I get into something, and I found that there wasn't one bit of evidence for any UFOs, and then I just said, forget it, I'm not interested anymore.
I feel the same way. I feel the same. You know, whenever with any conspiracy, especially when the government's involved, anybody like that I'm friends with that'll bring something up like that, I usually ask them. I'm like, have you been to the DMV or the post office lately? They're like, well, yeah. What do you mean? And I said, imagine those people doing your mastermind conspiracy. I don't think it's going to work, man. That's your government at work, you know. I don't know if that many people would keep something secret. I don't know, you know, what do I know? But I do know, I'll tell you, Jonathan, what I do know, this is a fantastic documentary. Now, this is going to be premiered on February 26th. It's about 10 days out on PBS. How cool is that? How did this all come about?
You know, they have a series that's run out of PBS Los Angeles, PBS SoCal, and
okay.
The person who called Link Voices, and the person who runs that saw my movie, and she contacted me and said, "Hey, we'd love to have you be part of Link Voices," which goes on Link TV. And so then it's on like DirecTV and Roku and Dish Network, and it's on a variety of national platforms. It's also on their website, linktv.org. It'll be on the 26th, and then it'll be on some local PBS stations all over the country. So you have to just check where it is for you, but you can always catch it on their website. And I looked at the program, and it's a fantastic program. They have great, I think this season is 10 different documentaries, all of which are award-winning docs. Many of them are by filmmakers who won Oscars.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, great, sign me up. And so I'm part of that series. And, yeah,
Jonathan,
I was super happy about
that. That's a good phone call to get. That is awesome.
It is.
Man.
That is a great phone call to get.
That is fantastic. And of course, listeners, I will be blasting out on all my social media on the 26th, reminding everybody so you can all watch this. I'm going to watch it again. This is one of those ones you'll want to watch a couple times if you can. It is really, really good. I just loved
so
it.
So much.
And
I really
also,
appreciate
I wanted
that.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely. It's just fantastic work. And I want to let everybody know, we have links, and it's very easy to get to, the main website for sex, drugs, and bicycles. You don't even have to type it all out, ladies and gentlemen. It's just sdbmovie.com. The letters, SDB, and then the word movie.com will get you there. We have links to the Facebook page, Instagram, IMDb, and the website, of course, on our show page. And that transfers, when we transfer this into a podcast and blast it out everywhere, those links will follow, of course. And
go ahead. A little heads up. We recently launched a VR world for sex, drugs, and bicycles.
Really?
And so if you're in, if you use an Oculus or any of the, I guess any of the Oculus platforms, if you go into Altspace VR, you'll see there's a sex, drugs, and bicycles world.
Nice. How cool. Let me ask you, Jonathan, because this is what you do for a living, you know, and you seem to be really up on this, you know, technology and stuff like that. As a filmmaker, I mean, I've heard a lot of, I'm not in the movie business, but I have, especially since doing the show, I have a lot of friends who are. You think that's where it's headed? You think that's kind of be the next big step is VR for film?
It's hard to say, but definitely we're moving in that direction. The of more immersive experiences, and the technology is getting more advanced. You know, every year the devices get smaller and they get more powerful. So, right now the headsets are a little clunky, they're a little heavy, but they're way better than they were a few years ago, right? And so I expect probably, when I was building this world, this was my first world that I built in VR. It felt to me a little bit, and from what I've been told, this is the first movie world in VR that anyone has built. It's dedicated to promoting a movie. And what's interesting is I had built the first website to promote a movie back in the 1990s. So, and this building this world felt a little bit like that. Like we're at the beginning of this new wave of information, of ways to present information and media. And I think it's going to just keep getting better. They're building now haptic technology so that, like gloves, so you'll be able to actually touch things and feel things. So all of that kind of technology is being built right now. It already exists, but it's not at the consumer level yet, but it's coming out. And so I think that ultimately you'll be wearing some very light glasses probably and putting on some gloves, and it's going to become a very real feeling compared to the way it is now. But it's still, like, during the pandemic it's become super fun. I have a lot of friends who are into Burning Man, and I've been to Burning Man many times. Mm-hmm. But I'm friends with the team that built the virtual reality Burning Man. So this past year a lot of people, because we couldn't go to Burning Man, so we all went to virtual Burning Man. And you go in and you see your friends. Yeah. And you can dance, and there's DJs.
Wow.
And
I'll tell you.
You can move around.
I haven't been since, I think the last one I went to was 2005, maybe 2006, something like that. So I did all that stuff back in the day. My wife now, you have to understand, my wife is about 15 years younger than me. And she's not a kid, but, she's in her 30s. And she's at that point now where she's like, man, I really, she sees the Burning Man stuff on TV and videos. And she's like, we got to go. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to go to the desert for a week, babe. That's a lot of walking around. I'm an old man now.
You got to ride a bicycle.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Everybody now is on electric bikes there.
Well, now that you're telling me there's a virtual one, I could say, hey, we can go. We can go. We will stay home in the night.
And it's actually really amazing. They've built it out. You really get a sense of what Burning Man is like in the virtual world. So I highly recommend it. If you don't have a headset, there's AltSpace has an app that works on Mac and PC. So you can check it out on your computer too. You don't get the full immersive experience, but you get you get some of it.
Well, how much can a headset be, man? I mean, if I'm going to do it, I want the headset. That's just me though.
It's $300 now to get the Oculus too.
I have wasted $300 on way less. That doesn't sound that bad. I can tell you some nights I went out in my Burning Man days. That is cool. That is very cool. Can you imagine, though? I mean, all this immersiveness, there's going to come a point. I mean, there has to. You know how we look at, like, silent film? I was just reading a thing this morning. Clara Bow's It movie that came out in 1927 was released today. It's the anniversary of that. And, I was reading this article about, the silent film. And everybody today kind of looks at silent film and goes, oh, it's very quaint, and that's very cute, and blah, 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 nothing like talkies, And I think that we're going to be looking at traditional film that way before we, you're watching that on a screen. How quaint. How quaint. Yeah. I'm in the world, Oh, man. And we're living in that, I know it's easy to get sucked into all the the nonsense and negative stuff that's going on in the world. And I'm not making light of any of that. You know, these are issues that big issues that need addressing and change. But man, we're living in such a technological, you know, golden age. This stuff's just happening. Can't forget about that either. You know, there's hope. There's hope. I'm going to be on Olympus Mons before we're done. This is fantastic. And if we can apply some of the stuff like Holland has to knock some of these issues out, we can focus on building that VR. How about that? How cool is that?
I'm
we
with you, man. I really like, people often ask me, are you hopeful about the future? And I finished the movie actually with that question. And my response is, you know, it's challenging to be hopeful about the future given all of the problems that our
right.
species is facing. But at the same time, we've never been closer to being able to have a kind of utopia on Earth, because we now have all of the technology and all of the knowledge and all of the wherewithal to create a society where everyone has enough, there's no hunger, where everyone has the basics covered, where we are doing everything in a clean and sustainable way, and where we're making a really great future for the planet and for ourselves and for all the other creatures, on this planet, destroying everything. And so
right.
I think that there's a lot of reason for hope, but it's definitely a super challenging time. And I just like to encourage everybody to try to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
I agree 100%, 100%. And you know, it's, I'm with you there, man. We're so close, and I'm hoping a lot of this stuff is just kind of the birth pains of something better and bigger, you know? I don't know, a couple months ago, I was very happy for the weekend, you know, I was like, that maybe the dark ages aren't going to happen.
Right.
You know, because I tell you, it was, for me, it's been a bit of a rough 4 years.
Super rough 4 years. Really, really rough. And I think, you know, we're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. but I think that there's reason to be hopeful. And I think we really need to address climate change in a meaningful way. And the thing is that is another thing where the billionaire class through their media has made us all think that there's some kind of opposition between addressing climate change and having economic prosperity, when the reality
right.
is that it's an opportunity unlike anything we've ever had to create more prosperity than we've ever had. Because if we shift our entire economy to be sustainable, that's going to create
mm-hmm.
enormous numbers of good jobs. And it's going to create enormous opportunities. And yeah, the people in the fossil fuel industry are going to suffer. But that's what happened to the people who used to sell horse and buggies when the car came in.
So I was just going
like
to say.
At the end of the 19th century, I don't want to say the number because I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it was something, it was the majority of Americans were involved in agriculture, you know, so
right.
it's a huge percentage of the population, and then that all went away, and now it's a very small percentage of the population that's involved in agriculture. That's the change that we're at now, and so it's not something to be afraid of. It's something for the billionaires who own oil companies to be afraid of. But what do they need to be afraid? They have so much money.
They could never spend it all.
Need.
Right.
Yeah. So really, this is an incredible opportunity for the people of Earth to make a better world. And I think we need to seize that, because otherwise, you know, we got some very serious challenges ahead, you know, and there's, you know, the climate change data that we're seeing is really disturbing, and things are going faster than the worst predictions in terms of ice melt and water, sea level rise, and weather disruptions and things like that. So, this is the challenge of our time. This is what we need to rise to the occasion. This is like World War II for the whole mm-hmm. planet. We need to mobilize, but we can do it. We have the technology. We know what to do. We need to listen to the scientists. We need to act. And, you know, I think that humans are capable of doing amazing things. I mean, obviously, you know, you just look around and you know, you hold a device in your hand that you carry with you everywhere that's far more powerful than the computer systems that sent men to the moon in 1969. You know, so it's
right.
People, we can do these great things. We just need to focus. We need to motivate. We need to learn from the places that are getting it right and doing it right. Pay attention to New Zealand and, you know, great leaders like Jacinda Ardern there. And let's make positive change happen for everybody here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting too, that you brought up the moon landing. You know, we went, and people don't realize this, you know, and they're like, when we see these big problems, these big issues, the Wright brothers flew, what was it, like 100 feet or something like that, under power with their glider. You know, that was in 1903. 66 years later, we're putting people on the moon. You know, when we get our shit together, step back, man. We got it. And I think I agree
That's
with
right.
you. I think we can do that with climate change. And I'm not just saying, as someone who owns a house 16 feet above sea level, it's made of concrete. We need to get on this, people. We need to get on this.
We need to get on this in a big way.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because Holland, they're really on that, too, with their I watched a documentary about that with their dike system and whatnot and all of that. It's from an engineering point of view, it's fascinating. You know, it's like, wow, they solved some problems. Big problem.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's a big reason why they have such a can-do attitude there, is because they literally built their country out of a swamp. And it's, you know, 17% of the country is on reclaimed land from the sea. If you build your country out of the water, I think it gives you a feeling like, hey, we can do anything. And I think that's a feeling that Americans had and that we've lost to some extent.
We need to get it back.
Yeah, we need to get that back. We definitely need
amazing.
To get that back.
It's amazing. You know, Jonathan, I've kept you longer than I probably should have, but you're fascinating to talk to, and I'm so happy I made a new friend. So cool. This is a fantastic film. I have to ask you real quick before we run out of time, are the gears turning for the next project? I mean, I know this one, we're promoting it and everything, and there's a million accolades on your the SBDmovie.com website. You know, you've won all these awards and stuff and been nominated for all this stuff. It's just, you go to the pages, your mind is blown. You see it all there listed. But are the gears turning for the next project? Or can you not talk
Absolutely.
About that right now?
They are, yeah. I'm one thing that I'm working on, obviously COVID has shelved. I probably would have been close to having another movie done at this point, but I didn't, you know, I just sat at home the last year trying to be safe.
I hear you, man.
And I've become a crazy cat person. And But I have an idea for a TV series based on sex, drugs, and bicycles, where every week we go to a different country and look at what they're doing right in creating a better world. And so that
How cool
is
that?
So that I, you know, I'm running around with that, looking to get that financed. And then I have another project that I'm working on, which is about animals. And I think that, you know, look, the COVID came from the way we treat animals. And many of our pandemics, I believe the number is 70%, but I need to double check that, have come from animals, a transfer from animals to humans that has resulted because of our animal industrial agriculture system. And so the way we, treat animals for food is making us sick in many ways, because it's not just the pandemics, it's the antibiotics and the growth hormones and the other pesticides in the feed
and just keeping
everything else.
Yeah, in a constant state of fear and stuff. That can't be good, you know, pumping that adrenaline speed and
Absolutely. Absolutely. The animals are filled with their own chemicals that result from the fear and the horrible conditions that they live under. So I think that our relationship with animals is evolving rapidly. The way people are talking about animals and animal consciousness and animal feelings and sentience and has evolved a lot over the last 10, 20 years. It's been a major shift, and I think that that's super interesting, and I'm working on a movie about that.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Anybody who doesn't think animals, they don't own pets, you know, I tell them, get you a dog, get you a cat, get you a guinea pig.
Exactly.
I have yet to meet an animal that didn't show some sign of emotion, you know.
Absolutely. And they all have their own personalities.
They do.
Last night I watched a movie with Naomi Watts called Penguin Bloom, which is on Netflix, and it's a true story about a family where the woman has a horrific accident and becomes a quadriplegic or a paraplegic. So she can't use her legs, and she was a very active surfer woman, and the family ends up adopting this magpie, baby magpie that's stranded. And the magpie becomes part of the family and helps her recover in a way by being able to step outside herself and care about another being. And so that was very, very heartwarming, very, you know, like no sex, no drugs, no bicycles, but definitely like
great.
A G-rated movie you could watch with your kids. And everybody would really enjoy it. But I was struck, you know, I'm always struck by these animal stories, and I read them all the time because I'm interested in it. And you just see it all over. When people take the time to get to know an animal, their whole perception of what that animal knows and thinks and their view of them as an individual consciousness and being completely evolves. And that's because they are thinking, sentient beings.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. We've got a big backyard. It's probably about 3/4 acre or something like that, maybe 1/2 acre. And we've got all kinds of wildlife back there and whatnot. And we have there's a snake that lives there that's native to South Florida here, a black racer snake. And it was so funny because he's lived back there for about 4 or 5, maybe it's a her, I don't know. Maybe it's a they. No judgment.
Did you ask the
But the snake lives back there, and all of my neighbors and everybody, you know, when they hear that, when I mentioned that the snake lives back there, they, be careful, they're real mean. And I'm like, well, the snake's never done me any harm. You know, he's always been cool to me. And I was telling my wife about this. I was kind of chuckling when one of my neighbors said it. She's like, that's because you're nice to the snake. You know, if it's doing something, you mow on the other side of the yard or whatever. So it's not, you know, she's like, you're nice to him. He's nice to you. You know, there's not, no big mystery there. And it's true, you know, it's true. I love animals. I think they're fantastic. And I'm glad to see that too, that more people, you know, and there's all these things that are happening, you know, Impossible Burgers and all that kind of stuff, and which are good. You know, I've had them. Fantastic.
That's right. Yeah. I saw the other day someone made a 3D printed steak.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, that's fantastic. If you're in 15 years, if you're living at the bottom of the ocean, or you know, on your way to Mars or something, well, yeah, download me one of them steaks. Well, it's going to take a half an hour. That's okay. I'll take one. I'll take two.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing.
You know, but there are a lot of opportunities now to get meat that's made from plants. And that meat requires a lot less resources to make, you know, a lot less water, a lot, you know, no land. And it's way better for the environment and obviously way better for the animals that don't have to suffer, you know, as part of the process.
But we got to change something, man, because if we don't, I'm telling you, we're going to wind up in that Soylent Green world. And nobody wants that. That ain't good
Definitely
at all.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
Oh, Jonathan, I have had so much fun today. You were just, you know, so fantastic having you on the show. And I can't wait to see your next project. Sign me up for that TV series, man. You know, Disney Nat Geo, if you're listening, that would be a good show to add to your roster there. All I'm saying.
It would be.
All
definitely. Call me, Matt Geo.
That's right.
Or meet me in VR.
I already paid for that, didn't he? Oh, man. That's fantastic. Well, that sounds like a really cool project, too, man. I can't wait. And I can't, you know, the way you're working and doing things, I know that I'm going to have you back on the show very soon because there's just going to be so many projects happening, you know. That's a good thing. I can't wait. But until then, I'm going to be happy with sex, drugs, and bicycles. Everybody, I want you to watch this documentary. It's a fantastic film, and you're going to come away going, that's a good idea. We need to be doing that. We need to be doing that. Maybe not the black peep stuff, but everything else.
Yes, definitely not that. Quite a lot of it. We could definitely learn some lessons, and I think we can make America great again.
Hey, that sounds like a good slogan. Let's get Jonathan into politics. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? You don't have time for that. You don't have time for that. That's too slimy for you.
I don't have the temperament either.
No, that's what I tell. Somebody said that to me one time. It's probably a couple years ago. They're like, "You ever thought about getting into politics?" And I'm like, "You know, you don't want artists to get into politics because we've seen what happens." And, you know, World War II wasn't a good thing. I would be bad. You know, it was. You don't want me in charge. I seem nice. Probably am to start with. Oh, man. Anyhow. Folks, this is, we're going to wrap it up for today. But, man, what a great show. I really enjoyed this. Again, the name of the movie, Sex, Drugs, and Bicycles. You have to check out this documentary. It's fantastic. We have links up. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all our various social media and on all the podcasting platforms. We're on all of them, it seems like. I think there's like 250 of them. But all the big ones. So, you know, if you want to listen to us on Spotify, you definitely can. So we will see everybody. What is it? Today's Monday. We will see everybody on Wednesday. We've got a fantastic guest coming on. And after, she's part of a new horror television series that's currently being filmed and all this and that. We're going to talk to her all about that. So tune in if, you know, you like the spine tinglings and whatnot, because we're going to be talking hardcore about all that. Very, very cool. Jonathan, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show. You are cool, turned up to 10, man.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great. Really enjoyed speaking with you, and would be happy to come back anytime and talk some more.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I'll be taking you up on that.
All right,
okay,
man.
Everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Pana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio. Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.